The governor says no to Syrian refugees. Are we safer? The governor of Connecticut welcomes a family turned away from Indiana. Were his comments appropriate? A civil rights bill that includes steps to ensure religious freedom, Organization Day rallies, and Jared Fogle is off to prison. That plus Lee Hamilton honored by the president and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 20, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Governor Mike Pence announced that Syrian refugees are no longer welcome in Indiana. He said that as governor, his first responsibility is to ensure the safety and security of Indiana residents. He says the policy will remain until Indiana receives assurances from the federal government that proper security measures are in place.
I just thought it was appropriate for us to take immediate steps to suspend any further placement of Syrian refugees in the state of Indiana until such steps were taken to close that information and background check gap.
Is the governor's motivation political? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Joel Miller, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Joel Miller, a majority of governors have made the same move. Does that suggest that it's the right thing to do?
Not at all. And I think that what we're seeing is another example of Mike Pence sticking to rigid ideology and dogma rather than actually taking in information and making an informed decision in leading the state in the proper way. And once again, he's embarrassed us in the national spotlight.
You're not worried about terrorists getting in through the Syrian refugee program?
Does anyone believe that the family that was turned away is a family of terrorists, a four-year-old boy and a clothes salesman? I don't think so. I think that he's trying to capitalize on xenophobic fear, and he's not really leading the state.
He's become a point man for this side of the argument, in effect. He was on Fox News today, CNN yesterday. He's penning an op-ed. I mean, 31 governors have done this, and yet everybody's turning to Mike Pence to explain it. Why?
Because he's had an experience with those folks before in his time in Congress, and they know him, and that's why he gets the invitation. I'm pretty sure that's the case. But he's right about this. Over 31 governors have signed on and asked the federal government to do this. It started with the director of the FBI last month saying that there are serious gaps in the information that we have about these refugees. And he said it really wasn't safe to bring anybody in here from Syria. That's what the director of the FBI said. And it was echoed by the Secretary of Homeland Security, who also said basically the same thing. So then you go have the terrorist activity in Paris, where a lot of innocent people died. And it turns out that one of the people involved in that terror attack came into Europe by way of Greece with refugees. And so you got those two things going right off the top. And I think that's when the governor said, wait a minute, we need to step back and take a look at this thing. And as you said, 31 governors and others. Senator Joe Donnelly has agreed with this position that Governor Pence took, as has Mayor McDermott in your party and others, that this is the wrong thing to do right now. And it's not about the one family. You got to draw the line somewhere, and they got caught in the timing of it. But it is about securing the United States, and these 31 governors are absolutely right to do this. until we have more information about how they're going to secure the situation.
Well, the president says that these folks are doing this for political reasons, that there's nothing to be afraid of because most of the people coming in through this program are widows and orphans.
Certainly, yeah. The president was pretty outspoken in that regard. And as a practical matter, these governors, again, the vast majority Republican, I think one Democrat among them, they don't really have the ability. They can withhold some of the funding for social services and that type of thing. But, I mean, this is a federal jurisdictional issue. It's not as if Mike Pence can shut down the borders, and nor can any of the other governors involved. But they can. They do control certain purse strings. So you get to your question about politics versus practical implications here. Clearly, there is more politics, but it's fear based. I mean, you have a situation where there's a visceral reaction to terrorism. You want to wrap your arms around your family or your state, figuratively, and keep away the bad people. So, I mean, that's a natural instinct. But keep in mind, it was just 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, that the nation was saying we need to do more for Syrian refugees because we had the worldwide photograph that got headlines of the little 2 or 3 year old kid who had died on the beaches of Turkey trying to flee.
5 year old, I believe, wasn't it?
Well, it's still the point being that you had everybody saying, sure, we want them. We want them to come in.
And what the president wanted was for 10,000 Syrian refugees to come to this country. Congress yesterday voted in bipartisan fashion.
46 Democrats.
Yeah, to put up obstacles to that.
Well, and it's a veto proof. I mean, they can override a veto that the president has promised. So, it is a situation based in fear. It's understandable. I'm disappointed in leadership on all sides, really, because when you have fear, when you have concern, when you have terrorism, then it's incumbent on our leaders to act rationally. And I think most of our leadership on both sides of this, the president has not exactly been understanding of the opposition, and a lot of the people who have expressed fear and want to shut things down have galvanized too. And so there's not real leadership that says, okay, let's take a temporary pause. Let's do what we need to do because we've already got a system in place. Fix the problems that we may have and get going forward again. It's, two sides galvanized and we don't get anywhere. And we have a country that's saying things I think it'll regret later.
As Joel said, a Syrian family was scheduled to arrive in Indianapolis this week. They were diverted to Connecticut. The people at Exodus Refugee and Immigration Office said they didn't believe the state has the power to stop the resettlements, but they didn't want the family to go through any additional scrutiny or drama. Meantime, Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy had some strong words when asked about Governor Pence.
This is the same guy who signed a homophobic bill in the spring, surrounded by homophobes, and protested how proud he was that he had done it. So I'm not surprised by anything the governor does.
Mike McDaniel, what's behind that attack?
Who knows? I mean, that's clearly a partisan shot on his part. I mean,
but it's not the first.
No, he did it before, and so he's got a history of this kind of stuff, so that's not surprising come from him. But in this particular case, this family, as I said before, got caught in the timing of the situation. I don't think this family was too much of a threat to anybody. But when you draw the line somewhere, you got to start, and they just got caught in the deadline. So, I still will stand by the fact that the governor did the right thing here. And it's very popular with Hoosiers because they worry that this is a program that's not been vetted very well, and it's got real terror implications, just as we saw what happened in Paris.
Malloy, back in the spring, in a public setting, referred to Mike Pence as a bigot, referred to RFRA as being incredibly stupid. The state of Indiana has tried to attract some Connecticut headquarters here. Is that part of the motivation for those remarks?
Probably part of it, but I can't be the only person who has noticed that Mike Pence begins nearly every public statement by saying something like, Indiana's a friendly and welcoming place. Well, he has to keep saying it because nothing he does is friendly or welcoming. and constantly embarrassing us on the national stage, I'm not surprised that other governors and people around the country are reacting this way. We don't look friendly. We don't look welcoming. We are not the crossroads of America. And it's an image problem that we have to fix, and this is just a symptom of that.
For the general public watching this, who do you think they point a finger at, Malloy or Pence?
Well, I don't think you can make a sweeping generalization, because I think there are a lot of people who are disappointed and upset with Governor Pence who will be cheering what Governor in Connecticut said. But I think a lot of people, probably the majority, even some who are upset with Governor Pence, will take exception to the characterization, because while it was specific to the governor, they may think it applies to the state. I think that the governor's got a bad luck streak going, if you will, because, you know, when they had the news bureau, they got scooped on their own story, and it became a big story nationally, and they had to defend that. Then you had the situation with RFRA, had to defend that. And now you've got this story, and it's a coincidence of bad timing for him. Because, you know, the day on Monday he says we're not taking anyone, and then Tuesday we find out that the first family was supposed to come to Indianapolis, and so he's been thrust into the limelight again, having to defend it. So he's had a streak here where he's found himself on the spot, and not necessarily for good reasons.
That family could have been headed to any one of 31 states, and they wouldn't be talking about Mike Pence.
Bad decisions, not bad timing.
In terms of this debate, you say, you know, when people are pointing fingers, who's right, who's wrong. Depends on where you start in the argument. And I don't think, you know, if you think that Malloy in Connecticut are right in this, or the notion that we should be open and welcoming.
Is he using a proper tone?
Well, it's a surprising tone, but it's in that governors typically like to say, my good friend from the Midwest, blah, 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 blah. But these two, do they still have professional wrestling down at the convention center? Sam Miniker back when
that.
He, yeah. These two would be it, because you pointed out, Jim, it goes back to RFRA and the comments about incredibly stupid, and then, you know, banning travel of state officials, if I'm not mistaken.
Would Malloy banned travel to Indiana?
Correct,
after
because of RFRA. And then you pointed out there were the ads in the Wall Street Journal and the Hartford Courant and others about attracting headquarters that are in Connecticut here. So this is it's not surprising in that context because of the history, but you're right. On a serious public policy question, you don't often hear one state CEO calling another one homophobic or stupid or anything of that sort.
This is based on the jobs competition, the fact that they can't compete with the environment that we put together in Indiana. And 31 states, 31 governors have made this decision, all of which are duly elected by the people of their states. They have a good idea of what the people of their states want, and this is exactly what they want.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: should Indiana accept Syrian refugees? Your choices are A, yes, B, not without additional safeguards, or C, no. Last week's question: does it make sense to spend part of the state surplus on roads? 90% said yes. 10% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Leaders in the General Assembly spelled out the plan this week for addressing the clash between gay rights and religious freedom. It happened at an annual luncheon put on by the State Chamber of Commerce, an influential organization that lists the need for new civil rights protections as one of its priorities. Republican leaders made it clear that they won't avoid the issue, but they also made it clear that new civil rights protections will go hand in hand with new safeguards for religious freedom.
There is a bill. It is going to start in the Senate. It will be comprehensive.
We will not be blackmailed into a policymaking position.
The fact that there is a game plan going in, that's excellent. We look forward to seeing what's in that bill and be able to react to it.
That's Tom Schuman of the Chamber of Commerce, preceded by House Speaker Brian Bosma and President Pro Tem David Long. John Ketzenberger, we've now seen the bill, heard objections from both sides. Does that mean that this is a good attempt at a compromise?
No, what you've got here are the extremes of the argument. With the, you know, the Freedom Indiana has said four words and a comma. Well, the Senate proposal is about 8,000 words. Seriously, I counted them.
20 pages.
7,920 some words. So what you've
I
got.
I hope you had a function on your keyboard. You didn't
count
them.
Every one of them, John. All right, I'm just that diligent. But what you've got are both ends of the argument here. So we're going to have a compromise someplace in between, or at least an attempt at that. What the Senate bill did is, you know, the Freedom Indiana folks don't like it. The people who were against or for RFRA don't like it. And so there's going to have to be a lot of work done, but we've got the goalposts defined now.
Well, we got one state senator who called this a homosexual bill of rights, and then you've got people on the other side who say it's a roadmap for discrimination. There's a lot of room in between there.
Well, Mike Pence always used to talk about guardrails. You know, you put those in front of the General Assembly, and then they maneuver the actual legislation. In this case, it's 16, 24, 36 lane superhighway, because there's a lot of room, as John suggests, between one side of the argument and another. It was interesting, the first news cycle, there was a lot of the
There are a lot of people who like the fact that there's a bill out
exactly.
there, and there's an effort.
And I think there was an effort, appreciation that there was a serious effort. As the volume of words suggests, it is, somebody has put some thought into it. Now, it may not be thought that people agree with, but there are two sides of this, and they're dramatically far apart.
Mike, you keep saying that this will get done.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a compromise. I think I will say this. Remember, at the end of the last session, Senator Long said repeatedly that there will be a discussion on these issues.
And that's why this will start in the state Senate.
And that's why this will start in state Senate, and that's exactly what you saw happen on Organization Day. Now, what he said was, we're trying to balance, you know, civil rights with religious liberty, which is a tough thing to do, clearly, and that's why you have a 20-page bill. But believe me, it's good that you have a starting point. It's good that it was offered an Organization Day, and you're going to see this thing, you know, discussed throughout the whole session, and we should have that open discussion about this, because there are genuine concerns about religious freedom, as there are about civil rights, and we're going to have this discussion. The fact that everybody doesn't agree at the starting point just probably means we're probably starting at the right spot.
The author is Senator Travis Holdman, a Republican from Markle. Some people think that's good because he has stood up to religious interests in the past, but he's also very conservative. What do you think?
I think that there's a simple way to deal with this issue, and it is four words and a comma. And I think that anything less than that is proof that the Republican Party really isn't embracing true equality. And if the governor and the leadership and the House of Representatives and the Senate really do understand the will of the people, as Mike mentioned earlier, this is an overwhelmingly popular in the state issue, and it should be passed as four words and a comma.
Well, still with this, to Organization Day in the General Assembly, where the State House was filled with demonstrators on both sides of the civil rights debate. First, there was a rally by supporters of religious freedom who want lawmakers to leave the Religious Freedom Restoration Act untouched. Some of them were in the State House for most of the day. Then there was a rally by supporters of new civil rights protections based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Some of them have been coming to the State House for years. But when House Speaker Brian Bosma addressed the members, he made it clear how difficult it will be to pick a winner and a loser.
I think we may have the most difficult legislative job that I've seen in 29 years of service in this chamber.
It takes a big toll on our citizens to have to hide and worry whether they're going to be fired, whether they can get a job, whether they can get rent a room.
We believe that fundamentally we have a religious disagreement. We have our belief and they have theirs.
It's Chris Allen, preceded by Christina Inskeep, John Schwana. Speaker Bosma also suggested that nothing may get done. Why is he trying to reduce expectations?
I don't know if he's trying to reduce expectations as much as just trying to keep this from exploding on Organization Day. I mean, as we just noted in the last series of questions here or comments, this is so polarized, and that's why the notion of compromise is so elusive. I mean, I respect the desire of people who want to try to hammer something out here on which there can be agreement, but it's going to be tough because one of these two sides, or potentially both of these two sides, will go away very angry if, in fact, there is a legislative solution that is signed by the governor.
You expect daily rallies come January?
I suspect that we'll have some early on, and I suspect that we will have people from both sides attending every day. Won't be a lot of rallies necessarily. There'll probably be regular rallies, but it's going to be an issue that will generate a lot of heat. The atmosphere is set, and I think you're right. I think at the end of the day, if they do come up with a compromise, there will be a lot of people who are not happy about it because they'll have made everybody mad.
Are Democrats unified on this?
I believe so. I haven't heard anybody that's not. And I can say that the rallies and those types of things, when we've seen in the past, the leadership right now in the legislature has ignored those rallies. So hopefully they'll hear this time because this needs to get done and we need to stop embarrassing the state of Indiana on the national stage.
But the problem is in the Republican caucuses.
You got supermajorities of Republicans in both houses of the General Assembly. All those people, again, were duly elected for a reason.
Right.
And they have support. And outside the Central Indiana viewing audience, this is not as big an issue as it is in the Central Indiana viewing audience.
But the Central Indiana viewing office audience covers more than 60% of the state.
What I'm telling you is at the end of the day here, you got to understand that if you're not willing to compromise on this, that nothing will happen. And then we'll find out in a hurry on the next election how big an issue this really is in the minds of voters.
Right.
I think there will be, and if you look at Senate Bill 100, they're starting with some protections in this draft that nobody's ever talked about before in Indiana.
And they're also superseding local ordinances that are stronger than the state ordinance.
But there's 17 of those, Joel, and no two of them are alike.
That's just the point I was going to make.
That's where you guys get the municipal government riled up,
because that was the issue you may recall last time when RFRA was enacted and mayors were saying, wait, we have our own ordinances that should be left standing.
We're going to come back to this another day.
Former
Subway spokesman Gerald Fogel pleaded guilty this week to federal charges connected to child pornography and sex with minors. Fogel was sentenced to more than 15 years in federal prison and lifetime probation. Judge Tanya Walton Pratt went beyond the federal sentencing guidelines and over the recommendation of prosecutors who asked for 12 and a half years behind bars. Joel Miller, does Fogel deserve that?
Yes, and I think that Judge Pratt did a great job, and she's a wonderful judge and did exactly what the public expected and what the crime called for.
She's known as being a tough judge, and if you're a judge and you've got a high-profile case like this, this is a chance to secure your reputation.
I don't think that's what she was motivated by. I think that his celebrity obviously didn't help him on the sentencing end of this thing, and no question about that. But he got what he deserved, and I thought she did a good job and handled it beautifully.
Not a lot of sympathy out there for Jared Fogel at this point.
No, I mean, I don't see the Jared Fogel caucus. If they're out there, they're not exactly coming forth with statements or news conferences. Clearly, this is the kind of thing that I think if there's a unified opinion on most anything, it's that these kinds of crimes that target young people, the most vulnerable in society, would be the most heinous. And so I don't think there is a lot of sympathy. It's sad, though. It's sad for everybody involved, certainly sad for him, certainly sad for his family. And you're right, he probably, the same celebrity that paid the bills for, what, two decades and had him on magazine covers and so forth, certainly played against him in terms of sentencing and the notion of, if not being made an example of, at least showing that there was no leniency here for this crime.
The judge ensured that he will be in prison because of federal guidelines longer than what the prosecution had asked for. But I still think that there are a lot of people who believe that, and I agree with her, but I think a lot of people in the public think that they should have thrown away the key in this case.
Finally, former Indiana Congressman Lee Hamilton is about to receive the nation's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. The White House calls Hamilton one of the most influential voices on international relations and American national security. He was the top Democrat on the panel that investigated the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Indianapolis native William Ruckelshaus will also receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He was the first administrator of the EPA. Mike McDaniel, did the president make good choices?
Absolutely. I think the Lee Hamilton selection couldn't be any better. I've always been against term limits, and I used to give my answer two reasons. One were Lee Hamilton and Dick Lugar, because they represent the kind of statesmanship that we ought to strive to put into public office. And this is a great choice, as is Bill Ruckelshaus. And I'm glad to see both of these gentlemen receive the nation's highest civilian honor.
Yeah, Ruckelshaus served two presidents. Lee Hamilton seemed to be a little surprised by this.
I think because Lee Hamilton, by nature, is a very humble man, and Congress and our world would be a better place with more Lee Hamiltons.
Yeah. By honoring him, does that help set him up as an example for others?
I certainly hope so, and I would add also, agreeing completely with Joel, but Bill Ruckelshaus' role in Watergate was a testament to integrity as well. So you have two people who have shown throughout their entire lives the integrity that we would hope all of our elected officials can maintain.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Joel Miller, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.